Welcome to Hello Therapy, a podcast to help you take charge of your mental health through evidence-based psychological tips and tools straight from the therapy room so that you can live life better. Do you ever feel like you're not good enough as a parent and feel overwhelmed by the sheer amount of parenting advice out there? Do you often feel guilt that you haven't parented in the way that you feel you should or the way that you want to? Well, stay tuned because I'm joined by parenting expert and clinical psychologist, Dr. Jo Muller. Jo specialises in working with parents, supporting both their parenting and their mental health. And with over 15 years experience across NHS and parenting research settings, Jo believes that helping parents is the most powerful way to help children, families and the next generation. She has a special interest in parental guilt and founded the Guilty Parent Club in 2023. So settle in for a truly informative chat that will give you some ideas on how to move away from guilt and the need to be a perfect parent to enabling you to embrace imperfection and being good enough. Welcome, Jo, to the Hello Therapy podcast. I'm so pleased that you're here today.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really happy to be here too.
So we thought we would talk about all things parenting, but particularly perfectionism and parenting and this real pressure that is on parents, particularly these days, around having to be a perfect parent and sort of how that shows up and really what we can do about it. So before we get into all that, do you want to sort of tell our listeners who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm Dr. Jo Muller. I'm a clinical psychologist. I work with parents around parenting, but also with their mental health. Obviously, those two things overlap really frequently. And I've been working with parents for over 15 years or so now, both within the NHS when I was working in CAMHS services, but also in academia and in research and now in private practice. And yeah, I find it a really powerful area of work. I think as parents, we have a lot to carry on our shoulders, but we also have a really powerful influence on our children, on the next generation. And of course, that's sort of double-edged sword because that can feel like a lot of pressure. And so I think the more that, you know, we can do to support parents and their mental health, the better.
Oh, absolutely. And let's just dive in then. What would you say, based on your experience with parents? Because I work mainly with adults. Obviously, I do come across parents, but that's not my main focus of work. For you, what are the main stressors that show up for parents these days that then put pressure on to be a good or perfect parent?
I think we could probably talk for the whole hour on this, Liz, because I just think that there are so many. I mean, it's coming from all angles. I think we can think intrapsychically a little bit and in terms of external factors as well. And obviously those two things relate to each other. But I think we are living, if we think about one of the most obvious things, social media influence now. I think that's something that previous generations didn't have to contend with. Mm-hmm. And although there's lots of really good things about social media for parents, and I definitely don't think social media is entirely bad, I am on there. And I think it can be very supportive and helpful. The sort of level of overwhelm with information can be a real stressor for parents. And I hear that a lot, that they're following lots of different accounts, they're getting messages from lots of different places, and they really aren't sure what to listen to and what to trust. Mm. Even if they're following reputable accounts, a lot of that information comes in really small nuggets that lack nuance often.
Yeah.
And as psychologists, we've studied for a really long time to have a full understanding of child development and the nuance of different influences on that. But I think when you're just getting snapshots on social media, you can build up a picture in your mind that isn't accurate, and can be quite frightening, I think, for parents, the information that they get, and then they fill in the gaps themselves. Yeah.
And even just it starts even when you start thinking about having a baby, doesn't it? You know, when you're starting to think about, okay, let's get pregnant. And even from that point on, there's a plethora of different voices, books, guides, stuff on social media. There's so much information. And as you say, that a lot of the time it can be competing and conflicting information. And it is really difficult to know who to listen to. And especially when you're a first time parent, I think when you really just don't really have a clue what it's like to be pregnant, to give birth, to have a baby, and to raise a child. You do go to the books, don't you? And you do go to social media and to the accounts that perhaps have large followings as well. And you take in what these people are saying, but that can be really confusing.
Yes, very confusing. And I think that's a really good point to think about before we even become parents, because we naturally start to build up this, essentially it is a fantasy of what we're going to be like as a parent, what our child's going to be like. And that's informed by so many things, you know, our own childhood, not least, and the ideas of things that we want to do the same, the things that we want to do differently, things that we see our friends doing that we think, oh, well, no, I wouldn't ever do that. Or you come at it with all these ideas. And of course, all from social media, the books, and you build up this idea of, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. And then when you actually meet your baby, the reality starts to set in that quite often that those expectations were just completely unrealistic. You know, maybe you have a baby that doesn't respond to the types of techniques that you've read about. Maybe, you know, you don't turn out to be as patient a person as you thought you were. And if you cling on to those ideas and those unrealistic expectations and that fantasy too rigidly, and it's difficult for you for whatever reason to adjust to the reality that's going on, that can be extremely stressful and result in some, you know, in mental health difficulties, but in addition, kind of feelings of shame, guilt, and that creates a cycle where you can just feel more and more stressed and like a worse and worse parent.
And that makes me think about it has been a trending hashtag, this idea of breaking the cycle. So you're talking there about the stories that we carry from our childhoods, and that how we grew up and how our parents were towards us and how they parented. And we are bringing that in, aren't we, into our parenting experience. And for a lot of people, their parenting experience or being parented was very, very difficult. And there can be this real sense of I cannot perpetuate that cycle. I have to break that cycle. I can't do what my parents did, or I don't want to. And that in itself becomes a huge pressure. And then if you're sort of going on social media and it talks about, oh, you've got to break the cycle, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, that's a massive pressure and a burden, I think, that a lot of people carry into their parenting experience.
Just hugely. And it just comes from so many angles, because you're carrying this burden that you must do things differently. Then, of course, you find yourselves, you know, in those moments where our brains are in the fight or flight response, where we can't think clearly and we can't act in a conscious way that we want to. We find ourselves perhaps even replicating some of the things from our childhood that we so desperately wanted to avoid, because those are the well-worn pathways in our brains. And then, of course, there's the guilt and the shame crash in for the fact that we've done that. Then we start thinking, you know, well, I'm going to mess up my child. And that's the message that you get from social media, that if you do X, Y, and Z, then that's a disaster and that's going to mess them up. I think, you know, we've got the message that everything about our child is because of something we've done, like every aspect of their personality, like we've shaped it. And that actually isn't what we understand as psychologists from the from the research evidence, but that's the message that people get on social media. And so you start to see every little aspect of their behavior is because of something that you've done as a parent. And I'm starting to feel stressed even just saying these things. Not to mention, if you have had a very traumatic childhood, that you will most likely sort of relive some of that trauma, you know, when you're parenting, if you are faced with kind of situations that trigger memories from that time, which is really likely. So trying to kind of process your own trauma and your own difficult experiences whilst parenting your child in this highly sort of perfect way that you have in mind based on what you've been told is, you know, it's impossible. I think we can hear that that's just completely impossible.
Yeah. And the fact that there is so much advice now, so many books, so many Instagram or TikTok or social media accounts, all saying sometimes the same thing, but a lot of the time different things. Lots of kind of trends, I think, in parenting as well. You know, parenting in the 70s is very different to parenting now. And I think that creates a sense that therefore there is a right way or a right parenting path that you should follow or you need to follow. And whilst that's not particularly, that might not be a particularly conscious thing that we're carrying, but it's definitely there, isn't it?
I think so. And I think all these different labels that one hears about different parenting styles is, you know, incredibly unhelpful. I think there are things that we do know are helpful in parenting, you know, but we've known many of these for a long time. So we know that children need a parent who is responsive to their needs, but not overly responsive. So people might have heard of the term the good enough mother, or, you know, we now say the good enough parent, but that's, in short, that's the concept that we shouldn't be perfect, because if you're too perfect for your child, there's not space for them to grow and learn. If we meet our children's needs perfectly all the time, they don't have the space to grow into their own sense of self and to develop the skills that they need. So we actually only need to be just good enough. And children also need boundaries. They need to feel safe emotionally and physically. They need a sense that they have a parent who's a calm, loving leader. And in the literature that goes back decades now, there's three different types of parenting that are talked about. There's permissive parenting, which is where perhaps more the child drives the relationship, and sometimes the parent can feel quite nervous about allowing the child to feel a range of emotions and leading the relationship. So the child ends up having a little bit, perhaps too much power, and that can feel a bit unsafe for the child. Then there's authoritarian parenting, which perhaps we might recognize from a couple of generations ago. That's a little bit more my way or the highway. There's not much emotional attunement there, and not much communication with the child. And then there's sort of middle way, which was termed authoritative parenting. Highly confusing, because it's very similar words to authoritarian. Yeah. But it's that sense of what we've just been discussing, being emotionally responsive, loving, but providing firm boundaries in a kind of communicative, respectful relationship. And so all of these different labels that we hear out there, like gentle parenting, attachment parenting, all of these things are actually really confusing, because we know roughly what is a healthy style of parenting that leads to, you know, good outcomes for for children when they grow up. But we also know that it's not a sort of, you must be like this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, we know that obviously, you know, if anybody listening is a parent, of course, there's more times when you act in a slightly more permissive way. Of course, there's times when you might get a little bit more on the stricter side, but it's about finding that, you know, rough area in the middle. And it's that sense of good enough. And good enough literally just means, you know, you're kind of getting it roughly right, and you're doing it in the way that it feels right to you, you know.
And what I'm hearing from you there is it about flexibility, like being able to shift and move depending on the circumstances, depending on how you're feeling or how you're doing that day, and not beating yourself up if you do get it wrong, because you will get it wrong sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about flexibility. And, you know, I realized that I kind of said getting it right, and it's the way we think about getting it right and getting it wrong. And I actually sort of even cringe when I hear those words, because I sort of feel like there isn't a right or a wrong. Yeah. And I think when we use those words, I think what we mean is, like, inside ourselves, do we feel like we handled a situation in the way that we feel okay about? I think that's what I mean. I don't mean in terms of necessarily like an external criteria. And, you know, when things don't go to plan, we have repair. And that is a really core concept within the idea of the good enough parent. If things don't go the way that we wanted to, we go back to our child and we apologize, essentially, and we connect with them. And that, if you talk to adults who've had traumatic childhoods, in fact, a lot of the time, it's, although the difficult things that they've been through were very difficult, what you'll hear is that if there was a repair with the parent, that is such a huge part of the picture of resolving the trauma. And now I'm not suggesting that when we, you know, shout at our kids and then we go and repair with them, that's a trauma. Obviously, I'm talking about like the extreme end of things. But what I'm saying is that repairing with our child is so important, and that's all we do. We kind of, we mess up a bit, we repair with our kids, we carry on, and we know that builds a really strong relationship, because they learn that humans are imperfect. They learn that emotions are okay. They learn that relationships aren't going to break. And those are all like absolutely essential, you know, lessons for a growing human.
Because when you, I mean, let's take the example of yelling at your kids, or it's one of those mornings on the school run where everything's really hectic and you're late and you're trying to remember a million and one things and get everyone in the car, etc. Like, in that situation, temper's afraid, the kids are tired, maybe don't want to go to school, and it all just gets very messy, or it can get messy, can't it? And in that situation, yes, you might snap, you might yell, or you're yelling to get them in the car, whatever it is. What would you say is the most effective way to repair in a situation like that, especially if you're in a rush? Because I think a lot of the time these circumstances happen when you're rushing to get somewhere, isn't it?
Absolutely. Look, we've all been there. I mean, we've all been there, you know, most days, to be frank. And, you know, sometimes if you're literally thinking about that situation, there's raised voices, there's rushing, there's getting in the car. And then, you know, I think many parents will identify with that moment of just taking a breath. You're in the car, everyone's finally strapped in, and you say, you just bring the temperature down a bit, and you just say, oh gosh, you know, that really didn't go the way that we wanted this morning, did it, guys? Let's just have a reset. You know, I'm sorry I lost my temper with you just then. I really want us to start off on a good note for school. You know, I can't wait to see you later tonight. Just something really simple. You know, you don't need to go into sort of self-blame and really kind of go too deep into it. Children, I think, in those situations, it kind of makes sense to them. They know that tempers get frayed when we're running late and it's such a sort of normal situation. Or even if you don't have chance then, you know, when you pick them up later, just do a quick check in then. I think it's, you know, it's so normal and it's so okay.
Mm.
And of course, you know, we know that the more we sort of start blaming ourselves and criticizing ourselves too much for these kinds of things, it actually makes the situation worse because it puts our brain in that threat state.
Mm-hmm.
So we're then actually more likely to lose our temper the next time we're on the edge a bit like that. And then we're more likely to react in the same way the following time.
Mm.
And then the cycle just goes on. So that's something that I work with parents on an awful lot to think about, well, how can we break that vicious cycle?
Mm-hmm. And someone who sort of identifies as a bit of a perfectionist as a person generally, and is bringing that into their parenting experience, and might have, I guess, high standards, high expectations for themselves to, you know, always remember the lunch money or the snacks for school, and to never lose their temper. And I guess that's what I see in some of my clients, is that these quite rigid rules about how they think they should be as a parent. And mm-hmm. again, sort of thinking about that idea of like holding on to those rules quite tightly. And then when a stressful situation is happening, that rule gets broken. Mm-hmm. And that's when the guilt, you know, really intense guilt can just flood mm-hmm. in.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, that then creates a sort of guilt and shame cycle, doesn't it, where you can get really stuck, can't you?
Certainly this is what I see a lot of, and I think what I tend to spend some time doing with the parents that I work with is kind of going back to thinking about, where have these rules come from, where has this mode of operating come from?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, many of us have grown up in a culture, in a context, but also within certain families where we achieve, you know, we work hard, we get things right, we do well, we achieve. And that has worked for us all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we become parents, it turns out that it's like the least controllable situation you can possibly be in.
Yeah.
And you can't achieve parenting, you know, it's a totally different kind of beast, and we can feel really uncertain and out of control a lot of the time. And that's very anxiety provoking for a lot of people. And so if we can learn to accept imperfection, kind of be flexible, focus on the relationship, that's really healthy. But many people don't really know how to do that, haven't perhaps developed those skills around self-compassion that can help us do that. And so instead cling more tightly, you know, try and control more. And that's where those rules, I think, come in, of like, well, what makes a good parent? I'm going to do this, 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 and this. And then if I don't do that, you know, everything's terrible. I'm a terrible parent. What am I even doing? So certainly I think going back to basics and understanding, you know, your personal approach to uncertainty and achievement, and how that comes in for you now that you've become a parent, and how you manage anxiety, I think it's important to go back to that, and then think about values rather than rules. And I know that's something you work a lot with, Liz. I think we come from similar angles in the self-compassion and the acceptance and therapy style of work, because values are, of course, are a lot more flexible concepts than rigid rules.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think one thing that can happen though with values is that there can be a sense of if one of your values is to let's say to be a loving and caring parent, or to be a loving and caring person, and that extends to being a parent, then those moments where you're not being caring, you're not being loving because you've got some kind of stress going on that kids don't know about, or you know, there's stuff going on that feels emotionally quite difficult, and that's impacting on your ability to be a loving and caring and kind parent in that moment. I think then, again, if you're towards the sort of perfectionistic stance, it's almost like a coping strategy where you go, oh, I've got to be loving, I've got to be caring at all times, and because that's those are my values. So I think with values, you kind of have to watch out or listen for the rigidity in them, and again, hold them lightly, like thoughts and feelings as well.
Absolutely, and operationalize them as well. You know, what does it mean to be a loving and caring parent? Does it mean responding in an entirely loving and caring way to every single situation that you're going to encounter with your child for the rest of your life? You know, is that what that means? Mm. You know, really kind of getting down to the nitty-gritty of what would come under that value, I think can be helpful. And then, you know, thinking about, well, when might be it okay to respond in a slightly different way, and why would that be okay, and weaving in that stuff around self-compassion and really understanding the impact of various stresses on ourselves. So again, that's something that we spend a lot of time doing, is really helping parents understand, well, what are you carrying? Why is your brain responding, you know, in threat mode? Is that your fault? Rhetorical question there. No, it isn't. And really kind of bringing some of that understanding online, that there are going to be moments where just that there's a biological response that you will have to stress, and you know, that's understandable.
And that's why it's important, isn't it, to if you're very used to threat mode functioning, you know, if you're an achiever and you've done lots of stuff in your life and you're a bit of a perfectionist and you need to sort of feel like you're in control, then you're going to exist in sort of oscillating between threat mode and also drive, i.e. getting things done, feeling motivated, achieving. And then that other system, that soothing system, what we talk about in compassion-focused therapy, which is the rest and digest. It's where you know, when that switches on, you feel calm, you feel content, you feel connected. That soothing system doesn't really get a look in if you're someone who's very driven, very ambitious, very perfectionistic.
And I think that's why Paul Gilbert's work is just so powerful for parents, that, you know, the visual that you're talking about there of the three human systems, even just seeing that and just recognizing that in themselves, that they are oscillating between the drive system and the threat system, is really, can really shift parents' perspective, and noticing that self-soothing system. And, you know, I think as a parent, you can quite easily connect to that. You know what it's like to cuddle your baby, you know, your children, and really feel that oxytocin in your body. And maybe you haven't felt that for a while, but it is an experience I think parents can connect to. And, you know, a lot of the work that I do, you know, parents can really see that they want to help their children develop their child's self-soothing system. And so we're a lot looking on both sides of the coin. Well, what about yours? You know, and times really spark something in parents. They're like, yes, obviously, if I want this to be the case for my child, I need to, try to do it for myself as well.
So what would be your take on how someone can not get stuck in that guilt and shame parenting cycle, particularly when, you know, there's stuff going on or you're in a rush or you're not having a good day. So where would you start?
I mean, I think so. I've done a little illustration of what I call the parent stress and guilt cycle, because I think it's important to notice that there's multiple places that you could start. There's the sort of inner, so there's the intrapsychic cycle that goes on. There's the trigger situation. Then there's the dysregulation, perhaps that you feel. Mm-hmm. Then might do something or say something you wish you hadn't. And then afterwards there's the guilt and shame. And then there's the, you know, the self-doubt. But feeding into that is all those external things like, you know, our unmet needs as parents, mm-hmm. which, you know, often many. There's pressure from society. There's information from society putting those burdens on our shoulders. We've got our childhood experiences that, you know, influence these moments. And we've also got our sense of identity as a parent, and that's often kind of shifting and changing. And, you know, I'm including in that what we've talked about in terms of the sense of achievement that we might need to feel and how rigidly we cling to some of these rules. And so when we notice that there's lots of different places that we can intervene, I think it gives us options. Mm-hmm. People talk about, you know, like, let's kick the mum guilt, let's, you know, mm-hmm. get rid of it. And, you know, it's not that easy. It really isn't that easy. And I think that making it seem easy only leads to more guilt, because parents are then like, well, why am I the one that can't stop feeling, you know, guilty and ashamed? So when I work with parents, I work with, you know, let's understand and think about why you might be a perfectionist and be bringing that into your parenting. Mm-hmm. You know, what societal pressures are there? What are your unmet needs that are leading your brain to be more sensitive, more likely to get tipped over into threat mode as a parent? You know, we all know we're tired, you know, we're hungry, we haven't slept, we've had no time for ourselves. You know, even those really basic ones, not to mention all the other things, we're more likely to lose our temper. Obviously, that's just how our brains are wired up. So then how can we start to, you know, just tweak some things, because we can't just go off to a spa for a couple of weeks. How can we tweak things just so that some of those unmet needs are a little bit less unmet? So our brain is a little bit less. And what can we understand about our triggers as a person so that we can predict what's coming? You know, what times of day tend to set us off? What types of behaviors or emotions in our child tend to set us off, and why? We can plan ahead, do something practical, or even just recognize it in ourselves. Mm-hmm. We've got more of a chance. Can we learn some sort of emotional regulation skills for ourselves? You know, have we ever been taught how to do those things? Can we develop some awareness and build in a pause when we start to notice that we're getting really wound up, mm-hmm. so that we don't erupt and we don't do the thing that we do it less often, I should say. Right. So obviously we're still going to do it. But, you know, that maybe occasionally, like, we can pause and do it a bit less, or we can turn the volume down on it a little bit. Can we bring in the self-compassion after things have gone awry so that we don't, you know, set our brain in that threat mode, because the self-criticism is just keeping that threat mode going. Mm-hmm. Can we give ourselves some grace and we learn some skills to do that? Because many of us didn't learn how to do that in childhood. Yeah. It's very, very hard for many people. Those are pathways that we need to, you know, build in our brain, and it's going to take time. So, and the last thing to say is that, can we learn some tips and strategies that can help our child's brain stay calmer and be able to listen to us more? Mm-hmm. So that's why we have the kind of two sides of the coin. We have to work with parents' well-being and regulation and all of those things. But if you still feel like you don't know what to do, like if you still feel like you've got no idea whatsoever how to get your children out of the house on time without everyone losing it, then of course you're still going to struggle every day. If you've got a bit of a toolbox of techniques, not parenting techniques exactly, but they are techniques that help keep your child's brain regulated so that they're able to take on board instructions or request boundaries more they're more likely to follow through with what you're asking mm-hmm. them to do, then everyone's going to stay calmer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've got some of those in your back pocket, you're going to feel more confident and you're less likely to lose your temper. So sorry, that was a very long answer.
What I was thinking there was, do you have like a go-to technique that is like one of your favorite strategies to teach parents how to regulate their emotions when stuff's happening and they're in a bit of an emotional, well, I call it an emotional storm. Is there one or two things that you tend to teach clients or parents?
So I have an exercise that I call BALM. It stands for breathe, allow, label, and mantra.
Lovely.
And it combines a number of skills. So it's the kind of thing that if you've got chance, you can do the whole thing and you can make it longer or you can make it shorter. But it combines, you know, what I think are the most powerful tools that we need for these moments. Breathing. I mean, you know, we all know this from multiple psychological models, not least mindfulness, but being able to take a pause and just notice your breath coming in and out of your nostrils. You know, don't have to do anything fancy, just focusing on that sensation is really powerful. I also quite like box breathing, where you breathe in for four, hold for four, breathe out for four, hold for four. Because I think that's very visual, and it's very concrete, and it gives you something to concentrate on. Then the sense of allowing, again, we're into kind of mindfulness territory here and acceptance commitment therapy territory around not trying to push away the experience. The label, you know, it really follows on a lot from Dan Siegel's work around name it to tame it.
Mm-hmm.
We know that if we can just tell ourselves what we're feeling or what we're thinking, that is a really helpful step in building that pause in before we react and just helping us to regulate ourselves. And then the mantra is something that I think parents do go to. You know, if you have a back pocket little phrase that really can kind of, it's well practiced and it can come online for you, even at those really stressful moments, then that can be really powerful. So some people have things like connection over perfection, or it's okay, I can handle this. I mean, it really could be anything, but something that is meaningful to you that you find you can really grasp onto at those moments. I think that that's really, that can be really helpful. So I wouldn't say that I have a one size fits all like magic bullet strategy, but what I do is use this BALM exercise. We practice it in a kind of longer form. And then I think parents can take away the part that they find most effective.
Mm. I really like that BALM. And it's a lovely combination of, yeah, quite a few different bits and pieces, isn't it, across ACT and CFT. And the mantra bit is something that I talk about in terms of self-compassion stuff that I do, you know, having a statement, a compassionate, self-compassionate statement that you can say to yourself in difficult moments, in tough times, can be really powerful, can't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of, sometimes I think parents need different ones for different moments. So maybe the one that they would use in that moment of stress, you know, I've have parents who might say to them like selves, you know, I'm the adult, just to get them to find that pause in that moment, and then bring out one that's more of a self-compassionate, soothing, you know, it's okay type vibe.
Yeah.
Later on. So it's kind of maybe having a couple of different options for different situations.
And this might be slightly off topic, but it's also, it's making me think about, you know, those situations if you're parenting a neurodivergent child, or perhaps you're a neurodivergent parent. And I think that brings in an added layer of challenge, doesn't it? Because often what you can experience is much more emotional dysregulation, and it can be very difficult to manage lots of shouting and, you know, sometimes aggression coming from your child. Do you work with parents who experience those kind of things?
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you asked, because this really is my background, is working with neurodivergents, right, over many years. So actually, although the framework I've been talking about is not neurodivergent specific, it's informed with all of that in mind, and it's completely sort of applicable to any family, but absolutely for neurodivergent parents with neurodivergent children. And I think a lot of the parents I see actually come to me pre-diagnosis, either of themselves or their child or both. And there's often an awful lot of guilt and shame there, that they often feel like they've somehow caused their child's behavior, difficulties that they're struggling with in some way. And so a lot of what we think about is really understanding their child and themselves first, and understanding, you know, once if people can understand that their child's neurodivergent, or that they themselves are neurodivergent, it really strips away a lot of that shame, because they realize, well, this is just who we are. You know, this is just the way we're wired up, and that's okay. And if you're not adding that second layer of judgment when you're in those situations where you are struggling with dysregulation of yourself or your child or both, if you're not also thinking, you know, I've caused this, this is my fault, then things suddenly become a lot easier to manage. And if you have a toolkit of strategies that you know are helpful for regulating yourself, regulating your child, which are, you know, helpful for neurodivergent people, then you feel more in control, you feel more confident. And yes, it's a difficult situation, but the difficulty is kind of there. It's not also a kind of rabbit hole you're going down in your mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you've shared BALM, which is a strategy for parents. Is it also a strategy for children, or is there there could be like a takeaway thing that people, listeners, could sort of use the next time their child is screaming and shouting and it's all feeling very difficult?
I think absolutely BALM, well, there's no age limit on that. Certainly children can learn some of those techniques. I think obviously it needs to be adapted depending on how old your child is and, you know, your child's personality. But certainly we know that breathing can be helpful for children. It's not actually the first thing I teach parents to teach their children in terms of emotional regulation. Mm-hmm. Breathing techniques can be a little bit advanced. I think what's most important to start with is helping children be able to label and understand the different emotions that they are feeling. So really going in with that emotional literacy hat on, learning different words for different emotions, learning how they feel in their body, where do they feel them in their body, and then starting to understand that there can be different levels of those emotions. So, you know, the anger volcano, understanding what it's like when it starts to bubble up, and, you know, realizing that there is a point between 0 and 100. And for some children and adults, it can feel like there isn't, but that's the work that we often do, is to start to notice that better, and being able to build in that pause. And for children, oftentimes it's about, if we are able to catch it before the volcano erupts, if you like, then it's about doing more physical things often to get rid of the, you know, the extra energy and the emotion in their body, the cortisol, the adrenaline perhaps, and employing more physical tactics. But it depends on the child. Some children would prefer to go to, say, a sort of a sensory cave and do something very calming, have particular lights or smells, soft things in that cave. But once children are in a sort of meltdown type state, there's not a magic bullet to make that stop. So what I teach parents really at that point, it's about regulating themselves, keeping themselves calm, providing a safe space for their child, and, you know, to some extent, just sort of waiting for the storm to pass. Mm-hmm. Again, a general concept, depends a little bit on the individual child, but just helping parents understand that it's not dangerous for children's brains. A lot of what we work with is more around the prevention and the planning ahead.
Yeah,
to make it less likely in the third.
That's so helpful. I think will be very helpful for a lot of parents listening. Is there a takeaway thing that you want parents to know? So if there was, like, I know this is going to be really difficult, but like one of the most important things important bits of advice that you could say to someone who is perhaps a bit of a perfectionist, who doesn't feel good enough as a parent, who gets stuck in the guilt and shame cycle a lot. What would you say to that parent?
Oh, there's so many things I would like to say to that parent.
You've got 1 minute.
Okay. You know, I think actually one of the most helpful things that parents hear, and they hear it really early on in the Guilty Parent Club that I run, and I did touch on it earlier, is that sense that our children are born who they are. Mm. And we as parents, we provide the fertilizer for their seed to help them grow in, you know, into the sort of brightest version of the flower that they are. But we don't change that seed. If they're growing into a rose, they're going to be a rose. If they're an orchid, they're an orchid. If they're a daisy, they're a daisy. We can't fundamentally change who they are. And I think for many parents, if you've had more than one child, or if you know families where there's more than one child, you know that they come out how they are. And when you look back at your child from when they were born, or from when they came to your family, you will be able to see that actually they've kind of always been the way they are. Mm. And that's really, you know, comforting and reassuring that yes, as parents, we can provide a good environment for our child. It doesn't have to be a perfect environment. We don't have to water them every day. You know, if a bit of gravel gets in the soil, it's all right. Mm. It's not gonna make the difference. It's about the overall environment. You know, if it's cloudy one day, there's no sunshine, it's not gonna make the difference. But that actually our children are who they are, and perhaps we don't have as much impact as I think we might think we do, and as perhaps the messages that we often get in social media have us believe. So if we can just take a bit of weight off our shoulders, I think that can be helpful.
You're right. I think when you have very young, or have babies or toddlers or very young children, you are their whole world, aren't you? And then they start school, and then you realize, well, actually, there's so much more influences now, friends, teachers, the academic work of school, and all the things that go on there. And I think that does help to take the pressure off a little bit, doesn't it? Because, you know, it doesn't feel so much focused on you as the parent. But I think holding that in mind as you move through the parenting journey, and that you are there to help guide your child through childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood and beyond, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but it is a marathon, not a sprint. You know, this is a relationship you have with your child for life. You are not, you know, solely responsible for everything about them. This is about forming a loving, safe relationship with them that sort of has an overall flavor of that. And it's about having that relationship with them for life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jo, for joining me today.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me. It's been lovely talking about the things that I like talking about.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Hello Therapy. If you found it helpful, don't forget to subscribe, follow, and review. You can get more well-being and mental health tips by joining our email list and visiting the resources section of our website at harleyclinical.co.uk. The Hello Therapy podcast and the information provided by me, Dr. Liz White, is solely intended for information and educational purposes and does not constitute personalised advice. Please do reach out to your GP or a mental health professional if you need support. Until next time, take care of yourself.